views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hi, everybody. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience some groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we have some of the foremost experts on organizational culture, helping you understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. Today, I'm incredibly excited to have Dr. Pat Basile with us. As many of you know, she is the founder of Transformation Talk Radio, the CEO of Unlimited Possibilities, and the host of the Dr. Pat Show. Today, we're going to do something a little bit fun and different. We're going to actually be doing a think tank. Dr. Pat and I are going to have a really open discussion about one of our favorite topics, which is this idea of cultural intelligence. Welcome, Dr. Pat.
Oh, it's great to be here. And, you know, it's so super cool to be talking about this. And, you know, for folks that are listening, the idea of having a think tank is one of these groundbreaking ways to say, we don't actually know what we don't know about what we're about to talk about.
That's true. We don't. Completely unscripted. We have no idea.
But that's really the cool part, right?
It is. Yeah, that by the end of our time together, we'll know more than when we started about this really interesting topic.
Yeah, exactly.
So when we think about cultural intelligence, what comes to mind for you?
Well, you know, I read an article once, and gosh, I don't know how long ago it was, but I read an article from somebody that said that there are multiple intelligences. And I was fascinated by that. And you know, fast forward to where we are today, we don't generally look at each other through the lens of these other intelligence types. But you're doing that. You know, your idea of cultural brilliance is really looking at a more holistic view of intelligence. You know, we're not like, are you smarter than a fifth grader? Although we can do that. But we're not just looking at, you know, your SAT scores, the GRE scores. There are other forms of being in the world, and especially in corporations, you're talking about, which are game changers, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, to your point, we tend to, I think, especially in organizations, focus on cognitive intelligence. You know, and knowledge, right? Yeah. What do you know? What can you analyze? And we see organizations moving more into the fact that emotional intelligence really actually, yes, counts because we're human and have emotions all day long. And so we hear trust coming up a little bit more. We hear emotional intelligence coming up. We hear people talking about, you know, is someone a cultural fit for the organization? You know, do they know how to handle themselves at work? Things like that.
Yeah.
But that's still not pervasive across the board.
No, it's not. And, you know, part of what you said, and I want to just get back to trust for a minute, is, you know, my mom used to say to me, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. And I never knew what she meant. I would look at trust in the same way. I've learned that there are so many different forms of trust that people have in their consciousness and have a real hard time identifying the guts of it, so to speak. You know, if I get onto a plane, an airplane, I am trusting that that pilot and co-pilot, whomever they are, I'm going to trust that they've done their jobs to get smart about flying a plane, that they've got enough sleep the night before. And so it's not a blind trust. You know, it's because we know that if we choose an airline, we're fairly confident that their standards for operating are pretty, let's just say, intact. If you buy an airplane from Boeing, you're pretty confident that the people that put the nuts and the bolts and everything, did the welding, that they know what they're doing. We're really less informed about human interaction. What do you think about that? I think we're less informed.
Yeah, I think we're much less informed, right? When I get on a plane, I really, you know, in order to be able to do that, I have to trust, right? Or I'll be an anxious wreck about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So I trust that, yes, everything's going to go as it should and the pilot knows what he or she's doing. I think we're less informed. And one of my favorite books on trust is called The Speed of Trust by Stephen Covey Jr. It's been out for quite a while. And I use that a lot in organizations when we're starting to talk about trust because he breaks it down into 13 different behaviors and links trust to credibility, links trust to productivity. You know, if you less trust, you or higher trust, you have higher productivity and lower costs. If you have less trust, you have less productivity and higher costs. And I love that he breaks it down to 13 different actual behaviors that people can take a look at. Because so much of what we think of as trust, like you said, it's sort of this innate, like I trust you or I don't, probably for reasons I'm not even sure about.
Right.
Unless someone really violates my trust or does something unethical, lies to me, you know, a really overt reason to not trust them. But other than that, we just trust based on instinct for the most part. And organizations, I find, you know, some are very evolved and really talking about trust and have developed trusting environments and a lot of psychological safety. But of course, the ones I go into, you know, haven't done that or wouldn't be there. And that's not often even something they talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're seeing this left and right and upside down and sideways. And, you know, people are either plugged in or tuning out at some level. But there are fundamental things in this country. Let's just stay here for a moment. In this country that we trust are going to happen. And there are some things that when they don't happen a certain way, we don't understand. Mm-hmm. You know, we trust that if we go into a workplace, generally speaking, it's going to be safe. Mm-hmm. But I did a show the other day on bullying with Chef Rossi, and the statistics don't iron that out. They don't, you know, pan out to say a workplace is safe for certain groups of people. And so these behaviors you just mentioned now start to look like and feel like blueprints that affect many, many other things in the workplace. And that's the culture.
It's a culture, and it's what the culture, I'm thinking right now of a company I'm starting to do working with some other consultants and as a team. And the culture, if you met the CEO, this is a nice guy, you know, but the culture has been complicit probably for decades in allowing bullying behavior.
Yeah.
And there's one person right now that they're working on, you know, extricating. And my question was, why has his behavior been tolerated?
Yeah.
Well, he's a rainmaker. He's this, he's that. He has this huge account. He's, you know, the reasons we usually hear. And all that's true. But why have you tolerated this behavior? And I came to realize it has been baked into their culture at this point. You know, and so it gets baked into the culture. And someone else in the organization who's a woman was told, when she talked about this one individual, she was told, you know what, you need to learn to deal with bullies.
Yeah.
Toughen up versus why don't we address his behavior? So now it's being addressed. But I think by and large, we see, you know, this lack of know-how around how to handle bullying behavior.
Yeah. And so what I think you're saying, though, is, listen, if, you know, the research is telling people there is something like 9 or 10 different intelligence categories of how we can excel in the workplace, we're using 1 or 2. I mean, what does that mean? What is the impact on that?
That means we are missing an enormous amount of information, an enormous opportunity. you know, because we know there's social intelligence, which is our relationship with other people, and then relationship systems intelligence, which is understanding how the system within people system within an organization mm-hmm. actually operates. And that's, you know, only people who are, in my experience, right, have taken additional training or are interested in these kinds of things, maybe have been trained as coaches, even know about relationship systems intelligence, right? So it's not necessarily something that's pervasive. And then I think there's something that's beyond that, which is why we're talking, one of the reasons we're talking today, which is cultural intelligence. And that there's something in cultural intelligence about a symbiotic relationship between the people, the context that they're in internally, and then the external environment. And yeah. I think a lot of that symbiotic back and forth, that energetic back and forth, I mean, it happens all day long and is really, really not recognized. People are not, by and large, tuning into it.
Yeah.
And so you're missing, we're missing out on so many forms of intelligence that would make how we work so much easier.
Yeah. I mean, just the idea that there is an interpersonal level of intelligence, you know, that has shown up in research and in identifying multiple intelligence types. Everything from, you know, linguistic to logical to spatial to music, kinesthetic, interpersonal, naturalistic, existential, all of those types. And they all seem to point to the fact that we, to some degree, Claudette, what we have, each of us has some of this. The question is, are we even aware of it? And if we are aware of it, how do we use it? So logic would say that if I'm going to, you know, have a meeting with a team and there's a team briefing that was done, a document done for me to read before the meeting, and decisions had to be made, you would think that maybe it would be a good thing for me to read the document, just read it. And so all of these other types of intelligence kind of fit in. And I wish I could say that, you know, I'm not alone when I say that those forms of actions just don't happen. They happen the way we think.
They don't happen the way we think. And we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue talking about that. You're listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. And we are going to take a quick break and come back and continue talking about this really interesting topic of cultural intelligence and how it's evolving in this very conversation.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Hey, did you know why they call the foundation? It's called the foundation because it completely eliminates your foundation for what you thought your reality was and creates a whole new space where you can have an entirely new reality that is foundationless. So from my point of view, they should call it the unfoundation or the foundationlessness. Either way, there's a big new global rewrite happening again because these guys cannot stop changing. There should be like a Change Anonymous that Gary and Dane go to. And it's happening April 28th to May 1st. You can find out about it at accessconsciousness.com/global foundation. It's happening in Paris. Go to Paris or do it online or find a pod near you. These are all the options you have. And what else is possible?
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley. And for those of you just joining us, we have a really exciting guest today, Dr. Pat Vasily, the founder of Transformation Talk Radio. Yes, so excited you're here. Yeah. And we have been talking about cultural intelligence, right, in our new think tank format, which is just a really unscripted back and forth opportunity for us to evolve this topic, right, and continue to explore it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so one thing we were talking about right before the break was you were starting to talk about what was coming up for me was really integrity in a way, right?
Yeah, it's kind of integrity, but yeah. I don't know. I mean, you know, I got to tell you, I was on the phone most of last night with some people that I work with. I mentor young people, actually young, old, doesn't matter, but I mentor young women who are in addiction and recovery. And I got to tell you that I just was there to listen. And, you know, the questions that they ask me, the things they ask me, because, you know, one of the ideas is, you know, if you're afraid of something, walk through it. Now, that's an emotional intelligence kind of. Mm-hmm. You know, it's how do we deal with things in the outside world that we think are going to affect us, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I'm in these communications, I was really struck by one of the intelligences that I mentioned to you. The logical intelligent part, the thing that says, if you're supposed to be ready for a meeting, Pat, and this is like a really important company decision, right, for you, then chances are you should really read about what that is that people are bringing to the table. But, you know, I was on these calls last night and people were so logical about their fears. They were logical about, you know, without getting into the politics of it, but they were logical about the fact that they watched one of their lawmakers literally say that he did not read the thing. And I thought, what am I going to say to them about that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do I talk about them, you know, really stepping into a place of trust, right? Because that's what we're talking about here. You know, but the logical arguments for things and having this real skill to be so logical and about what your case is for anything, that is really a skill. There's a real skill to that. But then when you take a look at, wait a minute, now I've got to pull in this existential and emotional side of this. Now I got to pull in the interpersonal side of this. Then it really presents some confusion. But I think in what you're talking about is, we need to authentically show up in each of these places because that's where I think the game changer is. What do you think?
I agree. And I think this piece around logic, and I'm so glad you brought this up because there is this, you know, there's logical intelligence and we have cognitive intelligence, but sometimes we really see logic missing, emotional intelligence missing, you know, in this, what your example of lawmakers voting for a bill without reading it first, which, wow, there's no logic or emotional intelligence there that I can think of. I was starting to think about what's going on when any of us, right? Let's say it's a company coming to get, you know, company, government, whatever, mm-hmm. group of people coming together to talk about something really important, and logic goes out the window and emotional intelligence, social, any kind of, you know, of the intelligence isn't really being honored or considered. It seems to me that we're back in our lizard brain, you know, and in some place primitive where we're saying, I just got to go with the party line, or I need to be political about this, versus saying, wait a minute, what's the logic here? You know, and I've said that in organizations before. I'm like, okay, let's peel back the layer of the onion. How was this decision made? What was it based on? You know, was it based on, it's going to be, no one's going to talk to me if I don't vote with them, but, you know, vote the way they're voting? Is it, what's it actually based on? Like, let's string the logic together and see if it actually holds. And I think that's a piece we don't talk about a lot, but if you use logic, that's a really good barometer to see if what you're doing actually makes sense in an organization.
Yeah. You know, the thing that I love is that, you know, we have blockbuster movies now that show characters that are all logic, right? And you go through the movie, and what is it? I can't remember the movie, which one it was, whether it was Voltron or something, where you got these really highly, you know, almost cyborg, really logical, gets to a point in the movie, and it's really crushing and heartbreaking, and a little tear kind of falls from the eye, right? Mm-hmm. like this little, oh no, where did he go? Is he like going to be crushed or something, right?
Right.
And, you know, this is really a tough one, though, in defining it, because I think that what you're saying, or at least I hear you say, is, you know, emotions play a part. But yet at the same time, they're probably frowned upon. These ladies I were talking with last night, they were logical. They were well-informed. They happened to watch the news, and not only did they hear their representative not read the bill, but then say they hadn't even read Obamacare. And I think that there's a level of integrity, as you said, that has to be articulated. But if the bar is so low, and you and I have been in organizations, Claudette, where the bar has been so low that even in an organization reading a policy, like maybe it's a leave policy, because I did that for a living, even reading the policy is not something you can get to, right? Mm-hmm. To even find out. But yet, you know, a leader will make a decision. Sometimes we have a form of cultural brilliance, right? Because there's a range.
Mm-hmm.
You may not be on the high end of that. You may not be on the high end of it. You know, sometimes it's not a life or death situation. Like in their case last night, this was life or death. They both have children that are have physical challenges. One is autism. The other one's cancer. Mm. And so for them, they have moved into some levels of intelligence that move beyond just the emotional, you mm-hmm. know, the details of it, the scoring of it. How do you present this to organizational leaders? You know, what is the way that we can bring a form of cultural brilliance to the table and talk about it, to touch upon both the science, the statistics, the linguistics, you know, the interpersonal, the intrapersonal, because we have got to be able to get this in the world that's changing now.
Yeah, we do. And I think, you know, I think a lot of cultural brilliance and cultural intelligence is the combination of all these intelligences.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can have one without really the other. And this piece about, you know, emotions being frowned upon in the workplace and things like that. One of the things, you know, I'm not going to say anything new here, but I think it bears repeating, is we are run by emotions. So there are emotions in the workplace all day long. And the emotionally intelligent piece of things is to honor the fact that we have emotions as humans, and they're running us, especially if we ignore them. And, you know, so there are new books and research on emotional agility in the workplace. And, that's the one I'm thinking of right now is Emotional Agility, but by Susan David. But these books that are talking about how do we manage our thoughts and feelings, which is essentially what emotional intelligence is. We're going to have thoughts. We're going to have feelings. How do we manage them? You know, and I think about what would a culturally brilliant workplace would be. I have a sense of how to manage my thoughts and feelings. I'm human. I'll make mistakes, but I know how to do it. I know when to apply my logic. I understand my relationships with other people. I understand what's going on in the overall system, and I can listen to the culture and understand what's going on within it. I mean, that's really what cultural brilliance is and cultural intelligence are about.
Yeah. 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 And, part of this is expressing what the blueprint is for this and then getting buy-in on, well, I can live with that logical part, but what do you mean by this other part? You know, what do you mean when you talk about the DNA of organizational excellence? You know, how do I get from maybe where I am, which is not scoring really very well on the cultural brilliance indicator? How do I get from there to be that organization that is moving upward? If nothing else, I think it's a call to not move further down the scale.
Yeah, that would be nice.
People in the organization, they know.
Well, they know. And there's ranges of how much this comes naturally for people and how much is learned, of course. But all these different intelligence we're talking about, a lot of it we are unconsciously understanding anyway. And so it's about being able to bring it into the forefront, bring it into the conversation and surface it and saying, oh, wow, let's talk about our relationship systems. How do our people systems really operate, right? Let's talk about how we value logic, how we value emotional intelligence, and how do logic and emotional intelligence balance each other out? I mean, these ideas and intelligences and their application are not nearly as complicated as they sound. If people are willing to tell the truth and trust each other enough to have that kind of a conversation. I think, it's such a big idea that I think we should take a break for a minute and think about it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Let's do that. That sounds great.
I'm Claudette Rowley and you're listening to Cultural Brilliance. When we come back, Dr. Pat and I will continue this really interesting unfolding conversation. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
If you're dealing with fear and anxiety, you've probably noticed that the more you fight these emotions, the stronger they seem to get. Dr. Friedemann Schaub, the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution, explains that instead of suppressing, we need to identify and resolve the deeper, subconscious root causes of fear and anxiety. His personal breakthrough program has helped thousands worldwide to overcome their emotional challenges. To learn more, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com and schedule your free consultation with Dr. Schaub now.
What is a brilliant culture and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
What if your body and mind were the compasses to the secrets, mysteries, and magic of life? Glenna Rice, co-host of The Questionable Parent, is inviting you to access all that is possible. Glenna is a 10-year certified veteran access consciousness facilitator who offers an amazing variety of life-changing classes and workshops. Work with Glenna from anywhere with teleclasses and workshops all over the globe. To learn more and see Glenna's current schedule of events, classes, and workshops, visit GlennaRice.com.
Tune in to Dynamics of Diversity Radio, scripting the new narrative for immigration with leading experts Kripa Upadhyay and Steve Tanija on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show will remove the noise that often accompanies discussions on this topic and share a new perspective on the dynamics of immigration and diversity, ever reminding us that together we are all at the core of innovation, excellence, and positive change. Visit OrbitLawPLLC.com for upcoming topics.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. And for those of you just joining us, my guest today is Dr. Pat Basile. And we are having a really interesting conversation about cultural intelligence. And we're doing it in a think tank format where it's kind of a free-for-all conversation about anything that relates to cultural intelligence. And Dr. Pat, we were just talking about like how do we move organizations in the direction of cultural brilliance, right?
The first thing is, you know, there has to be this thing that they see worth moving towards.
Right.
There has to be a realistic perspective of what that thing is. Mm-hmm. You know, there are going to be some cultures that let's talk about honesty for a minute. You know, honesty and authenticity, let's say that that's at the top of the bar. Mm-hmm. Everyone you know that is an executive of a corporation, at least that I've ever met, will tell you that honesty is a relative idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's relative. And I mean, these two women I was talking to last night, you know, their perspective clearly was that, you know, honesty is not showing up in the world. They're having a hard time with it. You know, where is it showing up? Mm-hmm. And you know, that is the first point of contact with this conversation about brilliance of any kind. Some people prefer you be honest and keep your word, even if you're going to fire me. Even if mm-hmm. you're going to fire me. They're like, don't be just thrown around that you're going to fire somebody. Yeah, you're going to get fired today. Yeah, you're going to get let go. Yeah. And then you don't do it. And my research was very clear about that. Mm-hmm. You know, when it said, listen, if you tell me you're going to fire me and I start making plans to be fired and then you don't fire me, I got like a mixed feeling about that.
Yeah.
I got a mixed feeling. I'm not quite at the place of gratitude because now I'm really ticked off at you because you put me, my family, and everything around me in so much fear. So even if you're not fired, but you've been told you're being fired, now you're resentful. Now you don't trust. Now you're not sure what you can trust. And I think that's what, you know, these two young women were saying yesterday. You know, they had a picture of their, as a matter of fact, I just saw a post on Twitter, exactly the way we're talking about. And the post was, I am a pre-existing condition. It's funny. I was talking to these folks and, you know, what they're showing is, wait a minute, you said you were going to protect me. The same thing's happening in the corporate world. Mm-hmm. You know, we've already been very, very clear that this is employment at will, period. Generations know that.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't been as clear as what the bar is for even an average form of cultural brilliance. And I think that's really what you're talking about, is like if the organization is not quite there, can the organization make a commitment to move the bar?
Yeah, and understand that the commitment to move the bar actually will most likely, right, increase their revenue, right? There's all the financial case for doing that is pretty intact.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, one of my sister-in-laws got laid off about a month ago from a major, major corporation after about 15 years there. Completely unexpectedly, had no idea it was coming. And it had to do with she had a high salary and sounds like they wanted to get rid of it. It had nothing to do with her group, her performance, anything like that. And you just look at that and it's like, how do you start treating someone like a number, really, right?
Yeah.
She makes this much money and she's been there a long time. She's very successful. So, right, we could actually cheapen this up, right? We'll get rid of her and hire this. She said they replaced her with a couple of summer hires who don't cost virtually anything to take over her work. So, you know, things like that where I listen to that and I think, wow. I mean, that's so far removed from anything close to culturally brilliant.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, a lot of organizations, if they're saying, if they are interested in their culture and they're starting to take a look at it, what I notice is they generally do, and they get some outside help and I think they start looking at what's important to us in terms of our values, our ethics, how do we want to treat people? You know, what do we think, you know, and they're tying it to how successful they're going to be as a company. Like, oh, if we have people who are really engaged, if we have, you know, really focusing on our talent, we're really doing this, really doing that. What kind, you know, how successful can our company be? And they start tying it together. And that's when I notice those companies start to gain some traction.
Yeah.
Toward being a little more intelligent.
Yeah. Well, you know, here we are, we're talking about this, but the buck really has to stop at different levels. And, you know, we're not just talking about a couple of CEOs, board of directors, and people hanging off in, you know, in some mahogany table office. We're talking about this form of interaction and cultural brilliance that can start at the low. I started pushing a mail cart in the mailroom for $61 at the telephone company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wish I could tell you I was the best employee back then. No.
Mm-hmm.
No, not the best. So how did I pan out on the cultural brilliance scale? I used to consider myself pretty resourceful there. I want to tell you that I figured out how to take a six mail trip route and reduce it significantly to 4. Then what's the question? What was I doing in the other 2 routes that I should have been delivering mail? Now, that's really an interesting dialogue. Now, why am I sharing that story? You know, because there was a part of me that just didn't absolutely understand that having a job was a luxury. It was not something that was an entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get that yet. So I had more fun literally skipping 2 of those mail runs, telling my boss that I didn't, and hanging out with the engineers at Bell Labs and looking at the frogs that they were using for sound, having one of them juggle, and hanging out with Arno Penzias, the creator, the Big Bang guy.
Mm-hmm.
Today, that would be called social loafing in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Couldn't really get a high score on the cultural brilliance scale.
No. It's a great
story.
There
were consequences to that, though. See, there were consequences. Today, and I knew what they were, and, you know, as a matter of fact, you know, when I actually got caught at that consequence, and I didn't get fired from the job, I got a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned from that second chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you believe that we are setting the groundwork for having the absolute understanding of if you do this, then you will be rewarded in this way. If you do this, then this will happen. I just don't know that we're doing much of that anymore. I think people mm-hmm. and organizations, and even that immediate supervisor, see, that's the key. That immediate supervisor is going to, you know, who your boss is going to set the tone for what you start to believe.
Yeah. And to your question, yeah. I don't think there's much. I don't think there's much of a foundation, much of groundwork anymore. Not like there used to be. And I think that's good news and bad news. You know, on one hand, I'm just thinking as you're talking about just this, the range of companies I see, right? And the ones that are just, even if they're, you know, 50-person companies, right, or smaller, doing such amazing things with, you know, with their culture and their brilliance, you know, to the companies that aren't at all doing very well with that, or aren't treating people well and aren't getting the best out of them. yet within the shifting, you know, kind of the shifting landscape, we see so many opportunities, right? Because when things start shifting a lot, you have so many creative opportunities for innovation to occur. And I think, yeah, my sense is how we think about work is really is in flux. It's in an actual transition right now. And in transitions, there's a lot of energy and opportunity. So we could definitely make the most of this.
Yeah. And, you know, part of what's happening now, especially in some you know, research I did later, is that we have expectations in the workplace. And, you know, this idea, this myth that people should not have expectations, I think it's just bogus. I think it's unrealistic. I think we're human beings. I think we expect things. And the idea of telling an employee or an employee body, you don't expect anything, I think that's nuts, really. People are going to expect things. They're going to pick up nuances. They're going to pick up what you say, what you don't say. They're going to watch how you treat other people. Mm-hmm. And the idea of creating a cultural brilliance organization is you can't be on one hand looking at talking to somebody in a particular way over here and then come over here and say, wait a minute. You know, you're supposed to be more interpersonal with your clients. You're supposed to be more respectful. But yet, wait a minute, boss. What did I just hear you and watch you and see you do with my coworker, Mary, over here? Behavior has got to be key.
Well, behavior is really key, and it needs to be congruent. So we can't, you know, a friend of mine said recently, I was working with a school doing some cultural change work, and she said, The kids can't get the best from the teachers until the teachers are treating each other really well, you know, which is the point you're also making. We can't say, you know, you need to improve your customer service, right? If you're a customer service representative in some way, and then not treat that person well. Like, that doesn't even make sense when you really think about it. Here's where logic comes in. Does that pass the logic test? No. That actually doesn't make sense. And so we need to become congruent in how we think about it. We need to be congruent and look at how we're treating people internally, and then what are our expectations of how they're then, especially if they're outward facing in any way, how they're treating people as they represent the company or work with customers. So it's this, I think congruence is really something that's missing. And let's go ahead and take a break and come back. Yeah. We can talk a little more about congruence. So this is Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley here with my guest, Dr. Pat, and we're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned.
Gifted intuitive healer and spiritual teacher, Sarah Luce, brings her unique style to the hit show, Small Steps, Big Breakthrough Radio, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in each month as Sarah turns reality on end and shows us how to experience expansive results with simple yet powerful steps. Expect an enlightening bend on what you currently believe is possible. For show details and upcoming topics, visit SarahLuce.com. That's SarahLuce.com.
Do you feel that there's a bigger, better life for you? Is there anything holding you back from living the life you were meant to live? If you'd like to find your life's true purpose and calling, join the world's foremost authority on primal spirituality, David Karsher, in Becoming a Sun Radio, emotional and spiritual intelligence for a happy, fulfilling life. Tune in once a month to Becoming a Sun Radio with David Karsher on the Dr. Pat Show and Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit davidkarsher.com today.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Brand consultant Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help you take control of your future and maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you're an individual trying to reinvent yourself and launch a new venture, or you're an executive trying to reposition your company to modernize your sales and marketing programs, Jen Morgan and the RAD Method empower you to play to your strengths and show up in the world as your most powerful brand. To learn more, go to jenmorgan.com. That's Jen with two N's, Morgan.com, or call 206-972-5366.
When your body is awakened, your spirit comes alive. Dana Canetto is a transformational guide, embodiment coach, and spiritual mentor assisting women in realigning with their truth and embodying who they are by connecting to the wisdom of their body. Tune in every month on Transformation Talk Radio and the Dr. Pat Show Network for Body Divinity Radio with Dana Canetto. For more information on Dana and her services, visit danacanetto.com. That's danacanetto.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, really excited to be here with my guest, Dr. Pat Basile, if you're just joining us. And we are talking about cultural intelligence. And Dr. Pat, right before the break, we started to talk about this idea of congruence and how organizations treat their employees and then expect their employees to treat others, right? How often we see this incongruence.
Well, you know, there is incongruence. There, you know, there is this idea of, and, you know, we have literally looked at what people say, and then we watch what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of it, when we watch this, what we look for is consistency and alignment. And, you know, that is congruence. Congruence is, am I consistent? Mm-hmm. And is what I say, my kinesthesiology, how I'm moving, does that mean that? All of the above. You know, I work for a guy that started a staff meeting, and the expression of how he felt was how hard he banged on the table.
Oh, now, yeah.
That today is borderline harassment. You know, I mm-hmm. mean, we can go in a lot of different directions on that. But the point that I'm trying to make is that you got to have everything line up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's like, you know, telling a child that I love you, honey, and you're screaming and you're just literally ripping their ears off. I mean, what are they going to hear? I mean, isn't it the same?
Yeah, it's very, very similar. And I think it's making me think about this idea of emergence, which we haven't touched on, you know, in organizations. About, I think part of cultural intelligence and all these intelligence is teaching people to start listening for what's emerging. You know, some of it's seeing, right? We might look out into the marketplace and see our competitors are getting better than us, right? Some of it might be pretty clear if we look at it, but it's also inside the organization, what wants to emerge? Like, are there places in your example of incongruence? Are there places where things are congruent? What does the conflict seem to be about? Where are people kind of chomping at the bit to move something forward? Where are they being stopped? I mean, in any organization, if we went in and could get deep enough into the dynamics, we'd start to see what wanted to emerge. And I find so often what wants to emerge gets submerged because your boss bangs on the table or whatever, right? That we
right.
start just treading water and trying to survive our experience in an organization versus thriving in our experience.
Right. 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 I mean, you know, here we are and we're looking at this idea of brilliance. And, you know, as we do that, we look at what's significantly important in the outer world. But this is an inside job, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is an inside job. Well, I think everything's really an inside job because it gets reflected in the outside world.
Yeah, yeah. What would you say to the people that are listening and thinking, how do we even figure out where my organization is?
You know, it's a great question. And some of it's, we touched on trust and authenticity a little earlier in the show, and I think those are two places to look. You know, are people allowed to tell the truth about their experience? Without, you know, recrimination, right? Is there some sort of psychological safety? Are people allowed to be authentic about what they think and feel, you know, in a reasonably professional way? Are people allowed to disagree without, again, any negative consequences? Are people allowed to tell truth to the people in power, right? Can we tell truth to power? Mm-hmm. Are we protecting the people in power so they don't actually know what's going on or they don't want to hear it? So that's one place to start. How honest are we allowed to be? Can we tell the truth? And what's the level of trust?
Yeah.
Is it a reasonably psychologically safe place to be? And I think those are some of the places to look, because one thing I know is you cannot ask a culture to evolve in a positive way, let alone a culturally brilliant way, if you don't have you haven't been able to tell the truth about what's going on. You don't understand what's authentic, and there's not some level of trust. It's just not possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, then you take it home and it spills over in your home. See, this idea of cultural brilliance does two things for us. One, even if we can move the bar a little bit in an organization, it could be an enormous change. You know, what we're talking about is, you know, the difference between a 1-degree turn, a 2-degree turn, a 3-degree turn. But the point is that you have to stop moving backwards. You know, you have to stop. I had an executive tell me one time, he said, I need you to come in here and stop the bleeding. And that was his view of his organization.
Wow.
Exactly, right? Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, he was right. I mean, this was a 911 call. And by mm-hmm. the time an organization gets to that place, then what you're doing is you're coaching the CEO to start to show up differently.
Yeah, you actually are coaching the CEO to start to show up differently, yeah, and to really look at his or her, well, you know, do the words and actions match, right? What is the impact he or she is having? I mean, there's so many, could pull out 20 examples. There's so many examples of taking a look at when, I think everyone's complicit in how the culture forms, and research shows that. And the leader, right? The leader has so much sway in what's happening in the culture at any one point. It's huge.
Yeah. 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 One of the things that I love about what you've been talking about is there is a structure that people believe represents brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're fooling anybody in a workplace when you're in an organization that doesn't look like that. We think we fool the people, and we think, wait a minute, you know, staff, employees, you know, I don't know many people that even like to be referred to as human capital. I don't even know who came up with that.
I can't stand that.
I mean, it's that close to insanity.
It is. It's a way to distance yourself, I think, distance ourselves from the fact that our actions impact people. It's human capital.
What a ridiculous phrase.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's the kind of thing that I think about that says to me, we're in the rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. And what you're bringing to the forefront, though, it gives people a ladder, and you see this ladder coming down, you know, with cultural brilliance. They have an opportunity to climb. And I think that's going to be the work that you're bringing to the table. You know, what you're talking about, what your book will be about, you know, the work that you're doing now, and it, bringing the model to the forefront. If you don't start out with authenticity the way you have it in the model, you might as well forget design and anything else.
Oh,
you know, if mm-hmm. I cannot believe that something is going to happen in the way you say it's going to happen, and I need to believe that consistently, then chances are I'm going to mimic your behavior in front of my clients, and that is not going to help the bottom line.
Well, and it's really, yeah, without so many times organizations, and I say this so often, I'm starting to feel a little bit like a broken record. But we'll try to make changes without first assessing what's actually happening, the authenticity of the situation. So we cannot make a change if we don't know what's actually going on. Or we think we know what's going on, but we haven't asked people what they think is going on, what their experience is, what the truth is like for them, or their own particular truth about the experience. Mm-hmm. So it's some of the things which I talk about in cultural brilliance, when I really distill it down, they're pretty simple concepts. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, for a lot of organizations, they're not necessarily easy to apply. And, you know, that's one of the challenges of it. But any organization can become, I think, a culturally brilliant organization. We all have access to brilliance. It's not, you know, it's not awarded to people. It's not the crown you get, you know, someone puts on you. It's something that anybody can take a look at, can read about, can start to understand and harness.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want, as we're starting to wrap up the show, Dr. Pat,
yeah.
is there a personal message you wanted to share with listeners, you know, your perspective on brilliance and cultural intelligence?
My perspective is that we always make sure that we look to ourselves first. We ask ourselves, how am I showing up? You know, even if I'm having a bad day today, how am I showing up? You know, can I shine in the world? Because that's really the key. That's the key for all of us. You know, many of us have worked in organizations, Claudette, that were less than brilliant. But that didn't mean that we couldn't shine. It just didn't mean that. And mm-hmm. that's what I would say to folks. You know, there's part of this where we can learn exactly what Viktor Frankl learned. And that is, we can create our own attitudes, have our own perspectives on where we are in our lives. And then take that. Somebody will be watching you. Somebody watches your brilliance. And when they do, they will mimic it. Mm-hmm. And then someone will watch them. And then someone will watch that person. I think that's one of the most important things for us to remember.
Yeah, we can always shine, right? All of us have that ability and capacity to shine, and that makes a huge difference. Absolutely. Thank you for that. And thank you for being on the show today, Dr. Pat.
Yeah, very fun.
It was very fun. And thank you all for tuning into Cultural Brilliance Radio. As always, we had a great time. Please join me on the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Pacific. Have a great week, and I'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at ClaudetteRowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.